103.2 Dublin City FM. Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan. Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Sod Show on 103.2 Dublin City FM. It's Brian Green and Peter Donegan in till 3:30 with all things horticultural, gardening and such stuff. If you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter at Sod Show. We're on Facebook, The Sod Show. We're on the web for the last 5 years, and that's sodshow.com. Email during the week, info@sodshow.com. Stay with us for the next half hour, where you can listen in to not one, but two interviews. We'll be talking with at Mick Kelly Grows. That's Mick Kelly of Grow It Yourself fame. And we'll talk with Cormac Cronin of The Bodega in Waterford. He is at Bodega Waterford if you want to get him on Twitter. And that's all coming up in the next half hour. So strap yourself in and let's get straight to interview number one, where Peter Donegan is catching up in part two with Mick Kelly about the development of Grow It Yourself.
DIY, I guess, if we were to take this into, for those of you not aware, we've just changed location. It's starting to trickle rain, and this is, of course, the Great Irish Outdoors down in Waterford, which makes it wetter again, if that makes any sense to you. As a company, if I sat down with my accountant, I guess he would be saying to me, look, DIY is now an established brand. That logo, that hard work, that travelling, it's paid off. It doesn't mean the hard work stops. It's kind of evolving yet again. As it stands, I guess the main gig, the Glastonbury that we referred to, is most, I guess, question mark in brackets, the Grow Fest weekend. Would that be a fair appraisal of it?
It's one of like 6-7 different strands, I suppose, of work that we do and events. We generally do two big events a year. One is Bloom, which is, you know, us going to someone else's gig, and then the other one is this event, Grow Fest, which is, you know, it's always a kind of a time for us where it's the last sort of big thing we do every year before our thoughts start to turn to, you know, next year. So I think I always felt like we could do it at the harvest time and do it as an event to sort of celebrate what, you know, what we've achieved as a network during the year. And, you know, at that time when we're also harvesting as growers as well, I suppose. So it's a big gig for us, but it tends to be, you know, an opportunity just for us to take stock and fire ourselves up, get inspired again. I always find after this event I'm completely exhausted but also totally reinvigorated, and that's really important. It gets us fired up for the work ahead as well, you know.
Do people, when you go for a pint at the weekend, do they sneak up?
Roll their eyes.
I won't suggest that for 1 minute, but do the chairs start to become a little bit closer and all of a sudden it's I've got, you know, these flies on my carrots. Do you get that a lot?
We do, yeah. We get a lot of that, and we get calls to the office from people like saying, I've got flies on my carrots, and that's, you know, that's all good. Like, I, you know, funnily enough, like, food growing is the great, it's the great leveler, like, isn't it? Like, it's kind of any kind of event where you can get together with GIYers, and that's why GIY groups in work so well in communities, that people who would, maybe have no right to be connecting, or no in any other situation they mightn't get on at all, they mightn't even like each other, and yet we're kind of united by this common kind of passion that we have. And so you can strike up a conversation and get stuck in and talk. All you have to say is, you know, how is your growing this year, and you're off on a conversation, and that's why it works so well, I suppose, as a thing. It's like anything, I think, when people come together in a combined passion, that it gives you that sense of community, which I always felt from day one was missing in this world. Like, when I started growing my own food, there was nothing I could join. I went to try and join a couple of flower clubs and plant clubs, and they just were, it didn't feel right to me, and it wasn't about food, it was about flowers and things. And I just, you know, Mark Diacono has just made that point, like, about if I can't eat it, I'm not at all interested, and I can totally buy that. Yeah.
What's relaxation for the now gardener? because I would gather, well, I would gather all of my mates who are, you know, a lot of them techie, not our Brian, of course, nor Anthony McGuinness. They just break the exceptions to the rule. But, you know, a lot of them will say to me, you know, I'm going to go for a walk or a run or a jog or up a mountain, and or I'm going to go camping. And I'm kind of going, you lightweights, you know, I'm asterisk noblesse, you know, Monday to Friday. And, you're going planting a bill of broccoli. You're now the broccoli planter and the asterisk noblesse.
Yeah.
What's relaxation? What's wind down time?
It's growing my own food. Like, if you don't, like,
and are I, you and just, I, are you just saying that because you're on the radio?
I swear
are you
to
trying
God.
To tell me you come home from work?
I swear to God, and it never feels like work. And I just absolutely love it still. Good. And it's meditative and it's centering. Like, when I feel stressed and like, I suppose when I'm at work, I'm stressed about, it's not about growing things, I'm stressed about businessy stuff and paying for staff and, you know, resourcing and all the usual things you worry about in any business or any organization. And then when I get home, if I can get out and get my hands in the dirt and sow a seed or spend a bit of time, like my potting shed, my wife slags me off, it's like a kind of a man cave. I go out there and I could stay there all night. Like, I do a bit of running and I do some other stuff and obviously time with the kids, but like I genuinely find nothing kind of shuts my mind off as well as food growing, because I totally focus in on it and I feel just completely relaxed within a half an hour out in the veg patch.
Wow, empathizing indeed. I guess in a sense the easiest question, Mick, is, you know, when you look back on all of this, and because to your credit you're one of the ones who stood up and said, you know, I want to do X, I want to achieve X, and X is going to be greater than, you know, one person. And as I was always reminded, you know, two is the start of a nice group. But
yeah,
I mean, when you look back from the journeys, it's kind of, you know, when you hear the stories of the Rolling Stones going out on the road in that piece of crap Bedford van driving around the place and the wheels nearly falling off, but they got there and they played the gigs, and you know, 32 albums later, and I guess Mick Jagger must be at least 120 now and still kind of going strong. But will you look back and kind of turn around and go, you know, I'm proud. This is, we've achieved. What's the next level? Will it be a case of, I never got it to go to there?
Yeah, I hope not, because like, I'm like a lot of people, I suppose, I'm very, very hard on myself. Like, I do have occasional fleeting moments of proudness, like, but mostly I'm just like, we need to do more. And like, I guess the kind of rod we've created to beat ourselves with is that we've always said we want this, you know, the goal is to have everybody growing some of their own food, and that's you know, we're nowhere near that. Like, I guess some of the numbers we kind of deal with now, like, we'll work with 130,000 school kids next year, helping them to grow some of their own food in Ireland and the UK, and yet it's still like tip of the iceberg stuff in terms of the problems we have in the food chain. So it's kind of, but like, I'd love to think at some point I'll be able to, you know, I suppose pass GIY over to somebody else as well. Would be lovely, thinking that it's, you know, going to be sustainable and has a long term future, to me would be a matter of immense pride, because I think, you know, you look at organisations like the GAA and the ICA and stuff that are still around 100 years later or whatever, and we need to be around in 100 years' time. So the challenge I have, I suppose, for now is to make sure we put the model in place that'll allow us that longevity. That's the key challenge. And then, you know, it's not all going to be achieved in my lifetime or my career or whatever. It needs to be passed on to whoever else next. So that's how I see my role, I suppose, is just making sure we're around long enough to achieve what we need to achieve.
I guess we're talking to the man who, I suppose, did, again, we're back to that driving around thing. There would have been new groups kind of starting up at the time. It would have been, well, honey, we had one group. Well, now we've got two groups.
Exactly,
well, now we've got three.
Yeah.
We've got a website. Woohoo!
Yeah.
You know,
now there's 20.
The mini celebrations. We just sold our first T-shirt. I couldn't believe it. You know, somebody came up and gave me £20. And it's a beautiful feeling when you get those dinky little milestones and you were there at the very, very start. I guess if there's a merry kind of McGinnity who's not a great, sorry, Mary or Michael, who's not a great gardener, but is thinking, you know, our village shirt's quite small, but we'd like to set up a group. Is how does one actually do that?
So I suppose everything is kind of led by what we call local champions. So like most of the change that we're able to create at a national level, I suppose, happens is it's champion led from the a grassroots in a community. So it generally starts with a person approaching us and saying, heard about DIY or read about DIY, whatever, I want to do something, I want to do a project in my school, or I want to do a project in my community. And we have a various ways we can help them, resources we can offer them, funding we can offer them. But it all starts with that person. And we've tried other ways, incidentally. We've tried going into communities and you know, trying to create that sort of change ourselves, and it doesn't work. Like, that's been a real lesson for us over the years, I suppose, where we've tried it. We've had sort of gaps, geographical gaps, and we've said, let's go there to that town and set up a DIY group ourselves and see what happens, and they never work.
No.
It has to come from the passion of a person in the community to be a change maker, for want of a less cliched phrase. So that's it. They come to us and we help them, and we've got, you know, supports we can give them. We tried to turn the DIY group model into a kind of a franchise that we could put in a box and give to people, and they can take it and mold it and shape it and do what they want and add to it, layer stuff on top, share that with the rest of the network. Like, that's been our model from day one, and some groups come and go. Like, some DIY groups have started and then fallen apart, and that used to make me sob into my tea, and now it doesn't, you know, because I suppose I'm a bit more relaxed about that they have a life cycle. There's a need for them in a community at a particular time, and then maybe not such a need, or the champion moves on to other things or whatever. So it's that's the pace of it.
We had a scenario a couple of years ago, and I think I noted this up on my own blog, where there was a company who made food very quickly, and the toy that went in that bag, the children's meal, was a grow your own kit. And at the time I remember thinking, God almighty, it's like the when they started giving away CDs with newspapers, when CDs were a thing.
Yeah.
And you're watching that kind of evolution, where
mainstreaming of it, kind of.
Well, in a sense, yeah, but bearing in mind, you know, what on one end of the scale, for a 1980s kid like me, you know, the heap down the back of the garden where you threw things was, well, we now know that as composting, and my two apple trees only got pruned because me and my brother climbed up the things and managed to break them. We didn't really know what growing your own was, I guess, in the 80s, but it is what it is now. And like you said, it is still that seed in the ground that was the catalyst for me getting to do what I now do for a living, but it was still essentially a seed in the ground. Did you find that there was a peak in kind of, on one hand, interest into DIY, also in uptake in numbers? Did it kind of dip somewhere along the lines of it? Maybe because of economics? And it seems to me that historically, this is a long-winded question, I apologise, but it seems to me maybe that historically, you know, after the World Wars is when the uptakes of allotments had kind of maybe got a little bit stronger and maybe waned off as well.
Yeah, it has been cyclical. I suppose, like, we started in 2008, which was probably the beginning of the bust, really, wasn't it? Like, when things started going really pear-shaped. So I guess we're a bust time phenomenon, if you want to put it like that. You know, we've been going for 7 years or whatever. Most of that time, Ireland's economy has been kind of in the toilet, and I don't know that that's necessarily problematic for us. I think certainly when I started growing my own food, it was a reaction to the boom as opposed to the bust. You know, I was kind of reacting to a kind of problems in the food chain as I saw it. It had nothing to do with like economics or trying to save myself money. But the like DIY as an organization has been sort of cyclical. Like, we saw a huge increase in DIY groups at the start. It went from zero up to 80 or 90 very, very quickly within a couple of years. And then as we, I suppose, our emphasis changed, like we became more interested in campaigns and programs as well as the GRY group network. And so I suppose that sort of, the number of GRY groups waned a little bit and now it's starting to rise again. So it's kind of, yeah, it comes in sort of peaks and troughs, I think, and probably always will, you know. But I'd like to think that there's a consistency in our message that's it's not about growing food to save yourself money. It's never been about that. It's always been about, really, about food and health and living happier and healthier and more sustainably. And I think that's a message that should last, I hope.
Well, I was going to analogize it, but, you know, there's a friend of mine who plays guitar and he runs or is involved in a couple of, I guess, music groups. And one of the things he said to me was, it's all right to be shit at guitar, Peter. He was referring to me on this occasion. But he said, you know, as long as you don't play too loudly when you're taking part.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of joke in there. But what we were actually talking about in the origin of the conversation was trying to keep a group of not professionally trained musicians together who had never actually played together.
Yeah.
And to get that group to kind of increase. And then on the other hand, as he noted right well, sometimes you get the mushroom effect where it reaches a climax and it kind of trickles down, and then you get, I won't call them splinter groups coming up, but you know, consistently across the board, I guess, and again, we're back to another long-winded conversation, but, you know, when we spoke to Karen, when we spoke to Ronan, I mean, you have surrounded yourselves, again, something I guess in business I was advised very well to do, to surround myself with people who will only make you better or make you look better is probably my infant way to describe it. Have you got that bit where people still want to remain part of that community? Have you got that bit right, more so than growing? Than the not so much to be disrespectful to the growing bit, but have you got that right? And have you got that core staff right, but also kept, I guess, the people who are involved in the groups, let's say, out in, you know, North County Dublin, that they still feel part of that?
Yeah, and I think I think the two things are linked, actually. You know, I think when, you know, actually, it's only in the last year or two that I felt we really have the team in place to sort of, you know, to make this thing sing, really. And it does sing now, and we've got an incredible team of people around us, I think. But and we haven't always had that, like, it's been tough at times, but, like, it's also we've made huge mistakes about how we've treated the GRY groups and how we've, like, handled the volunteers, and we've kind of expected a lot of them and sort of almost treated them like, you know, you've got to do this stuff for us, and made terrible mistakes and alienated some local champions as a result. But I think we've learned to understand better how volunteers work and what's important to them, and I think now we're at a stage where it is working very well, and that all means that the success of the thing just keeps chugging along, you know.
We noted, I guess, at another point in time, I'm wearing the blue t-shirt, you're wearing one as well, for those who maybe would like to buy one of them, the website is
DIYIreland.com /shop. Yeah, you can get lots of blue t-shirts with amazing taglines like holy chit and give peas a chance and love your hoe and all that other stuff. So they're all there, and that, like, I suppose on a serious note, all of that income helps us do our work. Like, it's as far as I'm concerned, impact and income are two sides of the one coin, and we've got to have both of those to be successful, you know.
One final thing, you've GIY Ireland, GIY International.
At website addresses?
I don't know. I guess I'm just asking the question.
Yeah,
What's happening? Are we turning into the Bee Gees?
Yeah, we are. We're going global, baby. Next, you know. we're doing a lot of work in the UK now. We've some projects in Cambodia and further afield, and anywhere in the world where someone wants to start a GOI group, we can help them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mick Kelly, it's been a real
Thanks
pleasure.
A million, Peter.
Finally,
cheers.
Meet.
Brilliant.
Cheers.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Our thanks go out to Mick Kelly and his wonderful team at Grow It Yourself International, which they are now. And thanks to them for facilitating the Sod Show and our recordings and a recording of that interview. We are coming to you from Dublin, but we were in Waterford with the microphones, and we got to speak last week to a wonderful guy who has a wonderful restaurant called The Bodega down in Waterford City. And if you weren't listening last week, we're going to catch up with them again, where they're talking about locally produced food and what that does to the restaurant environment in Waterford. Here's Peter Donegan talking to Cormac Cronin.
Are you finding that chefs have changed though as well? Is it a case now that Dad would have been in, my dad would have been in the wine trade all his life, and I've heard people say, oh, this wine, this grape, oh, this is how they grow this. It's and I'm kind of going, what, really? You know, they've gone out, they've seen the vineyards, they've seen how it's grown. Are you finding now that people, in a sense, not so much know that it's a carrot, that's the first part, but they also know that, well, that carrot was grown in that field down the road, and this is how we grew it, and the head grower is Dermot Carey, and he uses this soil, and he uses these fertilisers, or lack of fertilisers, and they mulch it in this way, and they do this and do that. Are you finding that that is equally as important in you might say, the USP, the unique selling point, and the sales pitch?
For our customers, like, the food industry is just evolving constantly. Like, you know, to be honest, it could be totally different next year, like, or the year after. But like, the way the food industry here is evolving, like, it's the rate it's evolving is phenomenal. Like, the launch, I was at the launch of the Waterford Harvest Festival down in Dooley's. It's in Dooley's every year on the Friday, and I was there 2 years ago, and the menu was lovely. It was really nice, whatever, and the food was lovely. But I was there yesterday, and the difference in 2 years between what we served then and yesterday is just this chalk and cheese. It's phenomenal how they've moved on, and they've moved on at the same rate as DIY Ireland have moved on. Like, it's the progress that's been made is just phenomenal. It's brilliant.
Switching interviewers to Brian, because I am here holding microphones, I might as well ask a couple of questions. But tell us about the name, the Bodega. Where did you get that name from? I kind of know it from afar, but where do you take it from?
It's actually a weird way we got a name. There's no sense to how we got the name, to be honest. We found the premises, to be honest, and we were working away in it. There was a Spanish tapas bar there before us called Mal's. It came to the stage where we had to pick a name, put something up, whatever. One of our chefs at the time, he's a Frenchman, and he was on his phone to his sister, who had been out the night before in Paris, and to a new restaurant, and said, oh, what's it called? And she just said, he shouted out Bodega, and we said, yeah, that sounds great. It's a silly way to pick a name, but it just kind of suited the style of our restaurant. Is kind of a long and cavernous and intimate, like, Bodega is a we found out afterwards is a Spanish for wine cellar.
Gotcha. I know it from that fun loving criminal song.
Yeah, the Green Bodega. Great song.
Let's play it on the Sod Show today. My last question for you is, you've expanded, you've branched out, you've set up a second restaurant, kind of, is it next door, quite next door?
Right next door, yeah.
And what are you doing?
It's called Burza. We're doing a mixture of half burgers and half pizzas.
That's not together in the order, is it?
No, but actually we actually created a new creation called the Burza. It's a burger in a pizza, and it sounds crazy, but it's phenomenal, to be honest.
I know where I'm going tonight.
Oh yeah, that's next door, 53 John Street. That place that hit the ground running, to be honest. We opened in December and it's absolutely flying. We brought over, it was an Italian plier we're dealing with for olive oils and stuff, and just got chatting to him, and I said, what if I ever wanted to open up a pizzeria? And oh yeah, he'd supply it, but everything for us. We got the real proper dome oven. It's a wood and gas fired oven. He sent over a chef, an Italian who's 50 now. He's been cooking pizzas since he was 16, and they're better than pizzas I've had in Italy, to be honest. And the burgers as well. In Waterford, there's no gourmet burger places, so we just decided to do both together rather than just one, and it's keeping everyone happy, thank God.
We're going to bring this slightly back down. We've gone a kind of a whirlwind around the involvement in the greater picture, which is DIY and I guess what essentially is a business that has costs and overheads. Do you, I guess, or does your accountant, is that the better way to put it, does your accountant see your involvement in DIY as an overhead, or is it, no, this is actually the best piece of marketing? And I don't mean to bring it down to business terms, but how is that role? Is it a tug of war between, well, that's good marketing, but it's also an overhead, or is it just a great relationship that you have with them?
I know, it's definitely the relationship is fantastic, and the connections we get, and just when things are happening in your city, like, you have to support things. Like, you know, if local businesses don't support local initiatives and festivals like this, like we're going nowhere, like, you know, to be honest. So it's great having the buzz and of all people down visiting Waterford and see what we're doing, and it's a win-win for everybody. All we need is the weather, to be honest, and thankfully today it's fantastic, but it's well worth it. Yeah. Everyone benefits, like people that are on the streets today, like they'll be in the restaurants of Waterford hopefully tonight, and it's a no-brainer, to be honest. The accountant doesn't get a word in anyway, to be honest.
My dad used to have a lovely thing when we were growing up, and I'm one of eight children, but I think when we were given our pocket money, if we came back with, I don't know whether you remember, the halfpenny, and we used to get the halfpenny sweets, I just about remember them. But when we came back with the sweet wrappers, if they had Irish addresses on them, he'd give us a half of that money back again until we... It was like a monetary law of diminishing returns, so to speak. And that's what we used to get out of it. Not far off. But I think when he figured out that Carra matches weren't made in Ireland anymore, it kind of changed a few things. But do you see it as a local business? I guess a local business, assuming that I'm living in Waterford, but do you see it like that, and therefore GIY are one of your neighbours, so they're also a neighbouring business? Is there a strong case of that about it?
Yeah, oh no, they're like they actually used to come into our restaurant in the early days and have meetings, and before they got offices and stuff. They used to go to a few different places, obviously, but just to see them growing and blossoming, like it's as if we actually planted them like a tree, or whatever. And just you're seeing them growing and growing, and they get bigger and bigger. And in a funny way, you nearly as a local person from Waterford, you're really proud to see what they've achieved. The building they have out now, planned for out in Arkeen, that's going to be phenomenal. Like it's amazing what they have achieved in such a short period of time.
Okay, finally, if people want to find out more about Bodega and the next door neighbouring pizza, Birds, that's the one I was looking for. But if people want to find out more, is there a website, Twitter, Facebooky thing on the go?
Yeah, the website for Bodega is bodegawaterford.com. And Burza is just burza.com, and there's all the links to Facebook and Twitter are on both websites. Don't ask me now to list out what they are.
Okay, we'll throw them up on sideshow.com, at sideshow on Twitter, and facebook.com/thesideshow. In the meantime, I'm off for a pizza, burger, and hopefully they serve good cake straight afterwards, because that's where you know my soft spot at this stage of the game, folks. All right, Brian, back to you, sitting right beside me or in studio.
Our thanks to Cormac and the staff of the Bodega in Waterford, who looked after the Sod Show on our travels down there. This has been another Sod Show, and I'm off to fill in the details of my passport, because I have to be travelling very, very shortly with the Sod Show. We're going overseas with the microphones to capture some wonderful recordings for the show, so do stay tuned for them. Catch us on the web during the week, sodshow.com, the podcast there from about an hour's time, or we say tea time in Dublin. And have a great weekend. Talk to you all soon. Bye bye.